The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We have a busy show. I'm going to get caught up with Bruce Cooper today. So Coop retired from Channel 12 back at the end of July. And there's been so much going on, and I just want to get Bruce on to see what he's up to and his heartbeat on Pulse of the Valley sports scene. So Bruce Cooper with us. Casey Jacobson will join us at 10:20 on the Chris Paul trade with the Phoenix Suns. Always good to catch up with Casey, and does great work as an NBA analyst and college basketball analyst. The draft is also tomorrow. We'll talk to them about that. Kerry Taylor is going to be with us today, the former Hamilton wide receiver, former Sun Devil, former Arizona Cardinal. He is the head football coach on his journey over at Santan Charter with Hamilton playing Chandler this week. Want to have Kerry on and get caught up with him. And then Michael Fabiano, all things on the Fantasy Football Focus with Sandy Charles, Michael Fabiano. So we have a lot to get to. Also today on the site at 11:30, we will have the Battle of Arizona Avenue luncheon between Hamilton and Chandler. I'm going to zip on over and MC that. And that will take place at 11:30 in downtown Chandler. Both coaches, Zadepski at Hamilton and Rick Gerritsen at Chandler, with three of their players apiece, will be on the stream. And it's being produced by the Chandler High students. So it'll be fun. That comes up at 11:30. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union. I was just on a call about 45 minutes ago with Jeff Mishi. We were rehearsing for a charity event involving the American Heart Association. Desert Financial Credit Union is involved in a lot of areas, a lot of places here in Maricopa County, and they continue to grow throughout the state. They take care of you. They take care of your business. Make sure you go to them. For all that, that's a Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, we appreciate their support. All right, so last night I watched the Vikings and the Bears, and it was painful. You know, it's fun when you're in a space where you have a team like the Cardinals, and they're doing great things like they do at Seattle. We'll see on Thursday night. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm hearing Bruce Cooper's voicemail. That is cool. That's cool. It's all part of the, let's see. You guys are just seeing this live. It's fine. So we're working on trying to get Bruce. So we'll have him here shortly. Jared Nielsen, Iron Man, is taking care of that. So, I'm watching the game on last night, and I'm looking at those two teams saying, okay, the Cardinals are better than both of them. I don't think either one is going to be a playoff team. I saw Tampa Bay 2 weeks ago look just awful, and then I saw them look good the other day. And so as I'm going through everything with the Cardinals getting ready for Seattle, I'm very excited about Thursday night and the direction they're going to go. We now have Bruce Cooper with us, I do believe. Now, Coop retired from Channel 12 back at the end of July. And I have stayed away. And, Jude LaCava, our mutual friend, he retired back at the end of March. With COVID going on, I wanted to give you guys both some time to breathe, Bruce, and just get away from it all and then find a time to get caught up. And I felt like this is as good a time as any. So you are at St. Vincent de Paul as we speak, right?
I am. I've actually, Steve Zabilski reached out to me about 5 weeks into my retirement. And as you know, I used to host something on Channel 12 every Thanksgiving week called Turkey Tuesday, and it would benefit St. Vincent de Paul, which in turn would use the donations to help the homeless and the needy. And so he reached out to me to see if there was an opportunity to work full time with it. And I just told him I really wasn't looking to do anything quite like that yet. I was looking to still enjoy my evenings and weekends and holidays off, that kind of deal. And so about a week later, he called me with another opportunity, and it was to work part time with them. And so I jumped at that, and I have learned so much about this organization, Brad. It's not even funny. I thought they were just you know, an organization that fed the needy or the homeless. But they have so many different layers and avenues that they do to assist, you know, our community in need. So it's really rewarding to actually be a part of what they do.
That is awesome. Good for you. I've spoke at their Monday morning breakfast many times through Steve. And John Junker's down there, of course, and others. And that's terrific, Bruce. That is doing God's work. That's the only way you can put it, I think. You can put it well.
No doubt. No doubt, Brett. No doubt.
Oh, all right, so let's bounce through a few things. The Cardinals are sitting here. Have you paid attention at all?
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me? No. I'm too much sports junkie. You need it. Just digress away from everything. No way.
Okay. Better play, DeAndre Hopkins or DK Metcalf chasing down Buda Baker 2 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago. Better play.
Better play. I'm just going to go with D-Hop, yeah, and I'll tell you why. The fact that he was able to outmaneuver, outleap three different defenders with those strong hands of his and not lose possession when he came down to the ground, because I'll be honest with you, I think we all saw DK Metcalf during the combine in Indy, and he just absolutely blew it up. I mean, you talk about a freak of nature. So it wasn't surprising that he could chase down Buda Baker the way he did. But with the game on the line and, you know, so much at stake for the Cardinals, and then I know in the heat of the moment, D-Hop isn't thinking that, but in reality, that's what it was. The heat of the moment, basically a walk-off, and to do it between three defenders, I'm going to give him the nod there.
Chris Paul, good move, bad move by the Phoenix Suns.
It's a good move, but I'll be honest, I hated to lose Kelly Oubre. And I'm not one of these media people who will follow the narrative that everyone else is trying to throw out there. I mean, they're trying to there's some media out there. I know that they were fed this line by the Suns, and everyone's trying to roll with it. They talk about how Kelly was like a black hole. He got the ball, it didn't come back out. Look, don't even try and sell me that bunch of ballard, Mark. I've watched basketball. I know basketball. I never once in any of the games I watched this man play for almost 2 years with the Phoenix Suns came away with that thought process at all. I mean, this guy, he's the most athletic player on the team. I love the way he plays the passing lanes. He scores in transition. He scores off the bounce. He knocks down three-pointers at crunch time. I mean, there are times during the season when I see the Suns' offense getting a little stagnant. I'm saying, hey, Monty, let's get Kelly back on the floor. You know, I never once, ever said, oh, man, this dude needs to throw the ball. I mean, he passed the ball. He's a black hole. Not at all. And so I don't buy that narrative at all. I mean, the guy's only going to get better, Brad. And the reason why he didn't play in the bubble, make no mistake about it, he was fully healthy. But during the pandemic, when there was a shutdown, you know, his agent went to the Suns to, you know, talk about an extension beyond that. And Robert Sarver wasn't feeling that at the time. And so there was an option players had. They could opt out or play. Well, his agent took that opportunity to have him opt out, you know. Why risk injury? I mean, I got to look out for my client's future. You know, he is coming off of a meniscus injury, but that's not a serious injury. But he used that. But look, in no way, shape, or form did I want to get rid of Kelly Oubre. But I'm gonna tell you something. I fully and truly believe this. Chris Paul is such a difference maker. He's such a tremendous leader that I fully anticipate the Phoenix Suns being a playoff team this upcoming year. You know, yeah, look, I look at his age, 35. I look at the money that's still owed him, 85 over 2. And, yeah, it's a lot there. But I tell you this, Brett. Devin Booker is definitely going to have to adjust his play. You know, people talk about how much of an impact or how much Paul's inclusion onto the Suns will help or benefit Booker. Make no mistake about this. Chris Paul is used to having the ball in his hands at crunch time. There are times when he just likes to take over. And we know that Devin Booker wants the ball in crunch time. Can you imagine Chris Paul handling the ball last shot time and he takes it and he misses? Well, you know, hey, now Devin's got to walk off the floor mad that, hey, we lost the game, mad that the ball didn't come to him. He has to massage or adjust his play or his style as well to fit in. I think it'll be a good marriage, but let's not think that for one moment that Chris Paul, during crunch time, is not going to have the ball in his hands, not going to decide who's going to take that last shot.
That's going to be fun. Before I get you out of here, Bruce Cooper with us. He is at I can say you are at St. Vincent de Paul. You are working with St. Vincent de Paul. That is what
correct.
That is the title. Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you have a title there, Bruce? Are you like the ambassador?
Absolutely. Absolutely not. I actually just do something in community outreach is basically what I do.
I'll call you the ambassador on the air anyways if you want. I mean, I think all right, before I get you out of here, Open Division High School Playoffs. Anybody got to touch Chandler? Chandler Hamilton this Friday night. I'm emceeing Battle of Arizona Avenue later this morning. Anybody got to touch Chandler? Because I know this. There's not a chance that you've unplugged from high school football. I know this.
Oh, man. You got that right. And let me tell you this. That matchup Friday night, a national TV game, no doubt.
Yep.
It's one to watch. But you know what? You know what, Brad? As much as you can like what Hamilton is doing, you know, Markio, Smith, and Howell, you know, some of the transplants on there, they've done a tremendous job in elevating Hamilton back to the status where Steve Bellis and John Wren had it, you know. But I've watched the Chandler Wolves. I've watched them three times. They are so deep or so talented that I just don't see anybody knocking them off their perch or denying them a second Open Division championship. Now, I do want to give a shout out to the Highland Hawks. I mean, Look, I remember a couple of years ago, it was Chandler going for a 2-point conversion to knock them out to go on and win a national championship. And here they played not national, but a high school state championship, excuse me. But here they are. Highland has played Chandler and Hamilton, excuse me, in back-to-back weeks. And I mean, they have played extremely tough. They've let the game slip away from them in the fourth quarter. But I just don't see anyone beating Chandler, though I do highly, highly look forward to Friday night's game between the two.
All right. Mr. Ambassador, can you come back on sometime? Are you okay with that?
I
call Paula Bogan the professor, so I'm going to call you the ambassador. It's okay.
Well, in her case, it's certainly warranted and deserved. In mine, you know, hey, it's just nothing but a window dressing.
You got it. See you, Bruce. Thanks for the time.
Hey, thank you, Brad. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. There's Coop. Bruce is over. That is great. He's doing that with St. Vincent de Paul. Good for him. And look, he retired, but clearly a lot of gas in the tank, man. That guy is just rattling off. These people, I'm going to get out of sports. I'm going to retire. You don't do that. You get out of the grind, but you're always paying attention. Casey Jacobson on Chris Paul, Nico Mannion, the NBA draft, Suns 10th pick. That's next. All right, as promised here on a Tuesday morning, Casey Jacobson joins us. Of course, does Suns work, FS1. Are you doing anything else this coming basketball season? I didn't ask you off the air. I just get that out of the way.
No, I am continuing my work with Fox. College basketball season will happen, Brad, which is great news for everybody. You will see me on Thanksgiving morning on Big Fox. The biggest game of the year is Gonzaga, number one team in the country, versus Kansas, second day of the season on Fox. Oh. And I'll be working the studio show with Jim Jackson.
That's good. Good for you, Casey. Look at you. Gonzaga and Kansas. That's awesome. Good for you. All right. Thanks. Chris Paul traded to the Phoenix Suns. Kelly Oubre out of here with a package of players. When you heard the news of Chris Paul being a member of the Phoenix Suns now, what was your reaction?
Well, first, excitement and intrigue. I'm all for interesting, and I know you are too, Brad. As broadcasters, we're in the interesting business. This yeah. certainly makes the Suns more interesting. Right off the bat, you want to start there. So I was excited. A couple thoughts, Brad. One is I'm excited for the Suns as an organization and their fan base because, you know, I'm a fan too. I used to be a player for the Suns, but now I'm a fan of NBA hoops. And there is nothing more exciting if you're a fan of an organization that is going for it. And you know what I mean by going for it. It's like, hey, we are all in on this season, not 2 years, 3 years, or 4 years down the road. We want to make the playoffs. We want to make some damage in the playoffs and see what we can do with this roster. I think the Suns fan base has been, frankly, sick of rebuilding for what seems to be like over a decade. I feel like the Suns have been rebuilding longer than any team in the NBA, maybe besides Sacramento. So I'm excited for the Suns fan base. But here's the other thing, and I want to be kind of honest and transparent. There is a risk factor here. This isn't all just like, hey, all upside for the Suns. Chris Paul is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He had an incredible resurgence of a season last year at Oklahoma City. And I'm not here to throw shade on Chris Paul's game or skill set at all. He's amazing. However, there's another side of this coin that you have to talk about, which is he can be a difficult personality for an organization and for young players. He's a grating personality. He yells. He barks at guys constantly. And there's a laundry list of his former teammates. If you want to go to Blake Griffin or DeAndre Jordan or Glenn Big Baby Davis or even Ryan Hollins, a friend of mine, who have come out publicly and said, hey, man, Chris is difficult to play with and can rub people the wrong way. So I just want to throw that out there. Suns fans need to know that, yeah, he's a great player, but this, you know, he can be a little bit of a bumpy ride. So I'm interested to see how Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton and others kind of deal with that kind of personality that hasn't been in the locker room the last couple of years.
Game on the line, 2 seconds to go, timeout taken by Monty. They come out. Chris Paul takes the last shot and misses. Devin Booker does not take the last shot. How's that dynamic going to play out over the course of the season?
It's a good question. I love that you ask it because it is. Some fans might be listening to us and say, what does it matter? They're all just trying to win. No. They're big egos, right? Like all-star players. It kind of matters to them. However, I would say knowing Devin Booker a little bit, this dude averaged over 26 points a game last year, and he can take the final shot. But I think we are overstating kind of like, I have to be the guy to take the shot, pound my chest like a caveman. It's not like that. I think Chris Paul, I think Chris Paul has done enough in his, I don't even know how many years he's played in the NBA, but he's 35 years old, so I'm guessing it's like 13 or 14 years. He has proven that he is more than capable of creating a shot for himself or for others. So Monty Williams has now another huge option. Let's not look at it as like Devin Booker is going to be mad if he doesn't shoot the last shot. Monty Williams now has a guy that can create something out of nothing, or actually now he has two guys like that. So I look at it glass half full rather than glass half empty if one guy is shooting and the other guy is not.
Before I get you out of here, Casey. Casey Jacobson is with us. NBA draft is tomorrow night. I want to talk to you about Nico Mannion. So a year and a half ago, Nico leaves Pinnacle High School, and the view is he's going to go to U of A. He'll be a one and done, and he'll be a lottery pick, and there's mock drafts with Nico and attached to the Phoenix Suns. A year and a half later, he's going to be a second-round pick maybe. What's happened with Nico Mannion's stock from your view?
That's a fair question. And I have been critical of Nico on broadcasts, like critical in a respectful way. Look, I'm a fan of Nico. I'm just not a fan of Nico in the top 20 picks of this draft, if that's fair. If somebody wants to take him in the later part of the first round, I'm all for it. Or in the second round, absolutely. He's definitely worth a pick there. Here's what I would say. Watching Nico, we had huge expectations. First of all, success is often determined by our expectations of somebody. So I would say that his freshman season at Arizona was not a success because we were anticipating him to be maybe the best point guard in Pac-12, and he certainly wasn't that. He wasn't even close to Peyton Pritchard last year, right? So start there. But I would say that I was a little disappointed in his shot selection. I think he's a much better shooter than his numbers indicated last year. And I thought it was because he doesn't really know the strength of his jump shot, but he took way too many off the dribble threes rather than catch and shoot. Or, you know, if he wasn't open off the dribble to get into the lane create for somebody else, it almost felt like he was passing when he was shooting, he'd be passing. So I think he's got a lot of room to grow as a point guard. And I am much more critical of point guards. I just think it's the most important position on the floor, and you need to play it really, really well and kind of have an identity. And I don't think Nico really knows exactly what he does well, but I will say that he has got great vision, good feel, which is something you can't teach, Brad. So he's got that going for him. That skill will translate to the NBA. I just don't know about the other parts of his offensive game. I don't know if those will translate, at least not right away.
Okay, 10th pick, do they take a point guard? Best player available. Would you take Nico if he's sitting there in the second round and have him learn behind Chris Paul? Is that too difficult of a stretch?
No, not at all. I think it'd be a great spot for Nico to be a second round pick, less pressure, and he gets to learn from a Hall of Famer. I think that's fantastic. With the Suns, you know, 10th pick, I think they have a litany of options. So I don't like this draft at the top. I really don't like Melo Ball in the top five, let alone number one. That's crazy to me, in my opinion. But I think the middle of this first round is really meaty. Like, it's a meat sandwich. You got guys like Isaac Okoro, Patrick Williams from Florida State, Sadiq Bey from Villanova. I know they already have Malik Bridges, another Villanova guy on the roster for the Suns. But I think Sadiq Bey is one of the most intriguing kind of two-way players, a guy that can get you a bucket and stop somebody. I compare Sadiq Bey to my former teammate with the Suns, Joe Johnson. I think he could be that good. They have similar build, similar size, and similar skill sets. So I'm going to go on the Suns' virtual draft party later tomorrow. And I actually think that they should take Sadiq Bey. That would be who I would select just because he can play. I like guys who are versatile, right? They don't just slide right into the shooting guard position. They can play 2, 3, or even 4. I love players like that, and that's why I like Bey there.
Good to hear your voice. I know California is an adventure with the virus right now being shut down again. So stay safe, and good to hear your voice, Casey. Thanks.
Brad, thanks a lot, man. Always a pleasure to hang out with you.
You got it. There's Casey Jacobson. Appreciate his time. Doing Gonzaga in Kansas on Thanksgiving morning. That's a lot better than whoever the Lions are playing to check out. I like that. Kerry Taylor is next, and then Michael Fabiano. Kerry Taylor on Chandler against Hamilton. The former Sun Devil and Arizona Cardinal wide receiver is over at Santan Charter, always outspoken on subjects. And then Michael and Sandy will be doing the fantasy football focus. That's all straight ahead. All right, as promised, I got away from myself the other night doing the Cox game. Cox called and they said, "Hey, Brad, our guy's out sick. Can you do a couple games?" I said, "Sure, I'll do some high school. I love doing high school games." So I do Desert Edge, Sunrise Mountain. Desert Edge looks loaded. They look like an open team. And the following week, I do Chandler against Highland. And somebody in my ear says, "You should talk a little bit about Hamilton and Chandler." And I said on the air, "Kerry Taylor is not walking through that door to help out Hamilton. Jarrell Robinson's not walking through that door. Tyler Shuck, Twirls." I go in through all these Hamilton people. And then I just get crushed the following day after it airs. So I figured, you know, I should reach out to Kerry Taylor, because here is a Husky that still has the career record. I looked this up. You still are number one in receiving yardage in a season. They have not taken that record from you.
Wow.
And yeah, you're still number one in that. There's a couple ones that you're, I think it's all-time receptions. You're still up there tied to the season. So I figured I'd reach out to you because you've been on a bit of an adventure in the last year. Arcadia, family, Santan Charter. I figured it'd be a good time to catch up. How are you?
Man, I'm having the time of my life right now, you know. It's been crazy, obviously, with coronavirus and quarantine and taking over a new program and meeting my kids online for the first time. You know, it was all just different things that, you know, we've had to just kind of take on the fly and run with, you know. And then having my first child, my little baby boy, Dre. The picture all at the same time. Just a lot of different emotions and, you know, a lot of different just aspects of life all kind of taken off at the same time. But it's been awesome, and, you know, I wouldn't trade anything for the world. So I'm happy to be at Santan Charter. I'm excited with the program that we're building, and you know, raising my son at the same time, and my wife is great, so I can't complain.
You're doing a house too. The last time I talked to you, I think you guys.
Yeah, we moved in our house last year. We moved out to Queen Creek, so awesome house, and just kind of just worked out to be really close to Santan. You know, it's just a 10-minute drive to the school and back every day. So I'm loving it, man. It's a perfect setup, and I like being out here.
Okay, how did it go? I mean, I see your social. Like every coach, this was an adventure. But how did it really go in year one from you, from Arcadia to Santan Charter?
It was just the right fit. You know, everything about it was exactly what I was looking for, you know, from just being on campus. You know, Arcadia, for whatever reason, could not or wasn't willing to get me on campus. So that was a big thing that, you know, if I'm the head football coach, I want to be around my kids daily to make sure they're doing the right thing. So, you know, one of my good friends, Brandon Tauscher, he was becoming the new principal at Santan Charter. And he's a guy that I worked with at Salt River High School back in 2016. Yep. He was my athletic director there. So he kind of knew how I run things. And he said, hey, I want you to come in and be my football coach. So I sat down with him and the superintendent, Dr. Sipple. And pretty much kind of just laid out, hey, you know, this is the type of program that I want to build. I want to be here for a long period of time. And, you know, these are the steps that we got to take to become a top-notch program. And they were 100% on board and, you know, put full trust in me that I could come and put the staff together and build a program and, you know, get a pipeline going and, you know, feeding kids into the program and kind of growing the numbers and, you know, we want to become a 4A program one day. You know, that's kind of our goal is we don't want to be in 2A for long. We want to grow the program and have a chance to go and compete against some of the bigger schools.
That's awesome. That's great. And did you feel like with COVID you're able to navigate enough? Or is it like, Brad, this thing's just been a mess as most coaches have had to go through this year?
I think it's had its challenges. But I think we've navigated pretty well through it. You know, been able to stay healthy. I think just kind of the hardest part early on was, you know, not being able to set expectations from day one in person. You know, it's hard to set day one expectations through a computer screen where it's hard for the kids to see your energy, you know, to hold them accountable face-to-face, you know, from day one. So we spent our first, I want to say, month and a half fully online. Pretty much all of spring ball, we didn't really have a chance to come together till summer. You know, so those challenges, you know, happened and, you know, we kind of worked through it and, you know, it kind of, this year's has been a lot different, you know, it's been a lot different not having passing leagues over the summer, you know, having a chance to see the kids compete, you know, against somebody else. Our first live competition was game one. So yeah, you know, it's hard to kind of figure out which kids you can count on, which kids, you know, you got to coach a little bit differently in a game manner. But it's been a process, you know, and we're starting to come together as a team. You know, biggest thing with me with changing a culture is everyone's not going to be on board with it. So, you know, we got to weed out the kids that, you know, aren't good for our culture and build around the kids that are going to help our culture in the football program moving forward. So we're kind of hitting that part right now as we enter, the playoffs this week and just really finding out a lot about our kids and which kids we can count on and which kids we can grow with. And just kind of building from there.
You've been coaching since you finished playing, pretty much.
Yes,
yeah, I mean, we've seen each other or talked on phones and all that stuff. But as you see yourself now as a head coach, what do you know now you didn't know when you got into this racket, into this business?
Great question. I would say when I first started off at Arcadia, I didn't realize that everyone in the school wasn't on the same plan as far as building and winning. And, you know, you kind of think like, oh, every administration wants to win and every administration wants this and that. And then you get there and you start to realize like, I'm pretty much on my own here. like, if I have an issue, I can't really come to certain people, you know, that I thought were going to have my back. So yeah. That's what made Santan Charter so appealing to me. It was like, all right, I know I have the support of the people that I need so I can build this thing the way I want to. So that's been the main thing. You know, obviously you always hear about the parents and playing time. I would say that hasn't really been an issue with any of the teams that I've had. I think the parents kind of trust me, and they kind of understand that, you know, the way I'm going to do things is how it's going to get done. So I think, you know, I always hear that from other programs about the parents this and the parents that. But that really hasn't been too much of an issue. So I think kind of moving forward now, it's just understanding, you know, really understanding these younger kids. You know, they're in the phone generation, you know.
Yep.
You got to make sure phones are away during school or during meetings, and just knowing how to relate to them. It's a little different than when I was in high school. Obviously, we didn't have social media back when I was in high school, which, I mean, doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but times changed.
It was that long ago.
But, yeah, man, it's a process. Well, I'm learning every single year.
When you were at Hamilton, your head coach, John Wren, right?
Yes, for 3 years, and had Bellis for one.
So he had Bellis for one. So did you take anything from either one of those guys in your coaching?
Both of them. Obviously, I mean, I was with Coach Wren longer, you know, and Coach Wren, basically, with him, it was his program. He wanted it done a certain way. He coached you hard, but you knew that he loved you at the end of the day. You know, he cared about his players, but just the daily grind of, you know, how to approach practice, how to approach meetings, and how to be a champion, how to create a tough program with tough kids. You know, that's kind of been something I've always modeled. Because obviously for a long time at Hamilton, we did it the right way and built a dynasty and won a lot of championships. So, you know, I tell my players now, I've been there, I've done it, I've seen it done. You know, so you can't tell me that it needs to be done a different way. You know, I've seen too many positive moments come from my days at Hamilton, my brothers, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, every coach that I've played for, I've always taken a piece from. You know, I always mention Bruce Arians a lot and Bill Belichick for my time in the NFL. And, you know, those guys show you exactly how it's supposed to be done. So I'm just trying to translate that now to the high school world and, you know, get these players to understand exactly the sacrifices that it takes to be a champion.
When I saw you at Arizona State, and obviously that was a rough patch for that program, in my opinion. So I don't know how much you're able to take from your college coaches, but you've had some heck of a line of coaches in the NFL pour into you. Anything from ASU, anybody there that helped you along the way?
I think Eric Yarborough, our receiver coach, he taught me a lot about just the fundamentals of receiver. Mm-hmm. I was coming from, you know, a football family. I was, you know, privileged enough to learn a lot as a youth and growing up. I thought that he was able to help me take my game to the next level at Arizona State. Dan Cazzetto was another one that was a major factor there at Arizona State. Great coach, old school coach.
Yep.
You know, about toughness and just really getting after it, you know, and had the opportunity to coach with him a few years later at Phoenix College, you know. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, great circles of coaches, you know, to be around. And like I said before, you know, you just take a little bit and piece of every coach that you come across, you know, the good and the bad, you know, just you pick little certain things that you like and you kind of store that in your back pocket and say, you know, I can use that in tough situations. So, you know, I was with the Arizona Cardinals when Ken Whisenhunt was here. Yeah. And, you know, we had a year where we kind of struggled a little bit, and then I watched Bruce Arians come in and change the culture. And then, you know, next year is the Cardinals are a 10-win team. So, you know, those little things like that, I've kind of taken with me just to, hey, you know, this is how you change a culture in a program. This is the things that you got to do. And, you know, so far it's worked pretty well for me. And again, I'm still learning every day and trying to become a better coach and just enjoying the process.
Kerry Taylor with us for a couple of minutes. I want to have Kerry on just to get caught up on Santan Charter. Also Hamilton and Chandler is this week. This Friday night, does this game do anything for you every year still? Do you look at it or are you past that? Because this was at a time where Hamilton just rolled.
Yep.
Years where you just rolled. There was no rivalry on Arizona Avenue. Let's just be straight.
Yeah. So, I mean, my 4 years, you know, obviously we were 4-0 against Chandler. It don't matter how old you get, you always pay attention to this game. You know, my quarterback coach right now at Santan Charter was Chandler High's quarterback when we played against each other. back in 06. And, you know, I tease him all the time, you know, hey, you threw a pick to me our freshman year, you know, and
Hesse quarterback,
you know, he's our quarterback coach now. And you know, we still to this day talk about the Chandler Hamilton games, you know, it's important. Once you play in that game, you understand the importance of the rivalry. You know, and I'm hoping that Hamilton's able to get back on the winning streak of it, you know. Obviously, they've been doing better, you know, these last couple years, almost getting over the hump. I hate when people say Hamilton is back, you know, because our standards when I was at Hamilton was we always beat Chandler. Mm-hmm. And so to me, Hamilton being back is Hamilton beating Chandler. You know, we can't be back if we're not the best team on Arizona Avenue. So I hope this year is the year that they go back and get it. But we'll find out Friday night.
It's really interesting because they're now in a space where they're actually playing each other. It feels like twice a year. They're going to play this game.
Yep.
And then they're going to meet in the open division in all likelihood if the brackets play out. It's not like your biggest game. I remember you played Massillon, Ohio. It was a national audience. You had a huge game. And people are like, wow, they're playing Massillon. And, well, they're playing Chandler. Well, yeah, they're rolling Chandler. So now it is like last week, I'm at Highland Chandler doing the game on TV. And Chandler's a little bit flat. And right down Arizona Avenue, Higley's hanging right there with Hamilton. So I figured out that in years to come, whoever is playing the week before Hamilton plays Chandler has got something going for them because those two schools are looking ahead. Doesn't matter how any coach says, oh, no, we're not looking ahead. Baloney. You're looking ahead. That's the way it is.
Those are the trap games right there.
That's it.
Avoid them as much as possible. But
Bantan Charter, schedule Chandler or Hamilton. There you go. There's your trap game. In like 4 years, Kerry. In like 4 years. Build it up.
We'll build it and we can get there one of these days. Yeah. We're on our way.
Did you see the DeAndre Hopkins catch?
Oh, man. I sure did.
In real time, what was your reaction?
My first reaction was I think he caught the ball. Like, as soon as he went up to get it, I noticed the ball never hit the ground. I said, I think he caught it.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you just watch the replay, like, oh, my gosh, he did catch that. And just to see, I mean, first off, Kyler Murray rolling to his left, you know, off balance and be able to put that ball right on a dime, you know, 45 yards down the field.
Yeah.
And for DeAndre Hopkins to be able to high point it at the point where he did to where only he could catch it over – three defenders and then haul it in and bring it down for it. I mean, unbelievable play, you know, unbelievable. I'm sure we'll be talking about that all year.
Did you have one of those yourself when you played?
I've never had a Hail Mary catch.
No,
that's, you know,
You had a lot of things, but you never had a Hail Mary.
Yeah. Yep. Can't put that one on the resume.
That's good. That's good. Better play. DK Metcalf chasing down Buda Baker. DeAndre Hopkins game winning catch. Better play.
Oof, man. I would say DeAndre Hopkins. The reason I say that was because he wasn't supposed to catch that ball. You know, with three defenders there, game on the line, all odds against him, he made the play. I think DJ Metcalf, obviously, that play was amazing. That was an effort play. That was just, you know. High effort and him just. Hey, his mommy and daddy a little faster than Buda Baker's mommy and daddy. It comes down to it. That's who we used to call it back in the day. So, great effort. But obviously, you know, his genes are a little bit faster. So he was able to catch up to him.
Yeah, that's good stuff. It's good seeing you. You have a final score on Friday night or no? You're not going to play that?
For my game or the Hamilton game?
Give me the Hamilton game, and then I'll ask you your game.
Hamilton, I love Hamilton to death. I don't think they're over the hump yet. I think it's going to be close. I'm going to say it's going to be a close one.
Yeah.
I know a lot of these kids at Chandler, and I just kind of know the senior class that they have. I think Hamilton's a year away. I think this year Chandler will probably get them. Next year I think Hamilton turns the tables around and kind of shifts the momentum back to you know, the south part of Arizona Avenue.
I think I see that too. There's more speed on Chandler this year than Hamilton, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with like a 38-27, probably Chandler.
And who do you have Friday night?
We have Scottsdale Christian. We got
what's going to happen there? You want to give a prediction on that just to get everybody fired up? Or
prediction, I'm going to say we're going to come out fired up. We're going to play physical football. And if it's up to me, we're going to have the upset. You know, we're going against an undefeated Scottsdale Christian team, very well coached, have great players, a lot of respect for their program. My kids are due for an amazing game. So I think we're going to pull off the upset.
It's good seeing you. Thanks for so much of your time. Stay well, stay safe. Thanks, Kerry.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
There's Kerry Taylor with us, and we are back with more after this timeout.
Hey, everyone. I'm Sandy Charles, and I'm joined by Sports Illustrated's senior fantasy analyst, Michael Fabiano. Michael, right off the bat, we will get to waiver wire needs, but first, with Saints quarterback Drew Brees out, how important is it for fantasy owners to go out and get quarterback Jameis Winston?
Well, Sean Payton won't tell us who the starter is, of course, because Sean Payton doesn't care about our fantasy teams. So I think it's going to be Winston. I don't think it's going to be Taysom Hill, but Taysom Hill is going to be mixed in. So the matchup this week is very good. They've got Atlanta. So if Jameis is named the starter, he'll be a top 12 quarterback. He's got a ton of weapons in that offense. He was the QB5 last year, even though he had 30 picks. So, yeah, he's going to be the top ad off the waiver wire in a lot of leagues this week. But, once again, Sean Payton has not named a starter as of yet.
Now, he top five the last year. Where would you rank Jameis this year?
I feel like, based on the matchups, he could be a top 12 quarterback almost every single week. But we haven't seen Jameis, right? I mean, he was a nightmare to deal with last season. It was all or nothing. Now he had LASIKs in the offseason, so maybe that's going to help. I don't know. But Michael Thomas, who's been a huge disappointment, but still one of the best wide receivers in the league, Alvin Kamara, the talent's there. And New Orleans typically is a team that gets into a lot of shootouts. So he should be productive, assuming he's the guy for Sean Payton down the stretch. Once again, quarterback's very deep, but Jameis is a guy who will probably have right around 100% ownership at the end of this week if he is the guy, and I think he will be.
Now, you mentioned it's kind of a battle between him and Taysom Hill, who's actually a tight end. He's been given quarterback eligibility. Have you ever seen this before in fantasy or in football throughout the years?
Most platforms aren't actually capable of having a player go on two different positions, right? So, like, I've run into this in the past where, like, you know, like Danny Woodhead was a wide receiver when he was with the Jets, but then he played running back and you can only really play him at one. We're dealing with it this season. Cordarrelle Patterson for the Bears. He played running back. He's been playing running back and wide receiver, but he's only listed as a wide receiver on a lot of platforms. So it kind of depends. But Hill, to me, I don't know that I'd be picking him up in redrafts unless Payton names him the starter. And at that point, yeah, he'd be a lot of fun in fantasy because of his running skills. But I still feel like Jameis will be that quarterback. So sort of sit back and wait on Taysom at this point.
2020 fantasy football can't get any weirder. That is for sure.
It can, and it probably will, but it's been pretty rough so far.
It has. It really has been interesting. Okay, is Buccaneers wide receiver Antonio Brown a must start now?
Must start now. Flex starter. I don't think he's going to be – like more than a low wide receiver two, high three flex type of player because the Buccaneers have so many weapons. Yeah. So last week they all kind of ate, right? I mean, Brady came out, he was mad after what happened against New Orleans and had a very good game. The matchup wasn't great on paper, but it didn't matter because Brady was just, you know, he was mad and he played very well and they all did well. AB, Evans, Godwin, Gronk, all of them. It's not going to happen every single week though. And they've got the Rams this week. That Rams defense is good. I mean, really good. So I'd say AB is probably a flex starter in most weeks, but the matchups also are going to determine what exactly his level of value is on a week-to-week basis.
Well, let's go to Brady's old team, Patriots, and running back Damian Harris. Where do you have him ranked?
So he's, for me, he's like an RB2 flex. And he just doesn't have a high ceiling. He doesn't catch the ball ever. And if you get into a negative game script, well, he's screwed because he doesn't catch the ball, right? So I'd certainly pick him up. Definitely needs to be added across the board. A matchup this week is good against Houston. But Rex Burkhead also needs to be added. James White's not even running enough in that offense to even have any value at this point. He could be cut. But Burkhead's had, you know, multiple touchdowns over the last couple of games, and they're using him like James White had been used in the past. So Harris is certainly worth a look. And if they're playing a team that could boat race them, he's not as attractive. But if they're playing a team like Houston where they should stay in that game, he's an RB2.
Now, the Ravens running game, they're backfilled. How are you handling it all?
I don't want them. I don't want any of them. When Ingram came back, I was high on J.K. Dobbins last week. I was high on Gus Edwards as a flex. And then Ingram came back to practice Friday and just ruined everything. You can't play any of them because it is legitimately a three-headed backfield monster, and none of them do anything because they're not getting enough touches. I don't care who they're playing. They could be playing the worst defense in the league, and the Patriots' defense is not good against the run. Not one of the three of them did anything. They completely cancel each other out of fantasy. It stinks. I love Dobbins. Unless they give him 15 to 18 touches a game, he's not going to do anything. And right now, they're not going to give him 15 to 18 touches a game. So he's not going to do anything, unfortunately.
As always, I'm joined by Sports Illustrated senior fantasy analyst Michael Fabiano. Michael, before we get to waiver wire needs, before we jumped onto Zoom, I was reading about Kyler Murray, and I think I read 29.2 fantasy points per week he's averaging.
Yeah, he's going bananas. That's better than Lamar was last year. Lamar was at like 27 and change. He's been better. He's going to rush for 1,000 yards. Kyler Murray is what we wanted Lamar Jackson to be.
Yeah.
Honestly, he's what Lamar was last season.
Is anyone surprised by this with Kyler?
No, not at all. So before the Cowboys drafted CeeDee Lamb, I had Kyler 3 and Dak 4. And then Dak went to 3 and Kyler was at 4. And Dak was balling before he got hurt.
Yeah.
Dak was great. Nobody surprised. This kid is good. And any quarterback who can – and then you get Nuke in there. I mean, Houston Texans, what the hell's wrong with you guys? But – Christian Kirk is playing very well. He is running the ball like no other quarterback in the league right now. He's basically their goal line option too.
Yeah.
He's got, 9 touchdowns already? Mm-hmm. Something like that? I mean, I got to look it up. His touchdown production is insane right now. I got to look this up right now because I'm even
I think it's 9 touchdowns.
I'm pretty sure. You know, a lot of stuff is in my head. I got a lot of numbers in my head, Sandy, so I got to make sure that I'm giving you
I don't know
you
the, how you do it.
I'm giving you the correct I'm giving you the correct numbers, but I mean, no, he's got 10.
10.
He's got 10 touchdowns for a quarterback.
Yeah.
And we're in week 11. It's great. He's had a rushing touchdown in every game but one. That's it. Every game but one. It's crazy. And when you get that from your quarterback, so he's got 27 touchdowns so far this year, and we're only in week 11. This one could go down as one of the greatest fantasy seasons of all time at the quarterback position, which is funny because the greatest performance came last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that performance usurped the greatest performance of all time at the quarterback position, which occurred the previous year from Patrick Mahomes. We're seeing a trend.
And Kyler is so much fun to watch. Okay.
He's awesome. Yeah.
Waiver wire and needs. Let's start right there at quarterback. Who are the needs?
Yeah, Jameis, again, assuming he's the quarterback who will start for the Saints, is the quarterback to get. I told you to pick up Tua Tagovailoa last week. Had another game. Not huge fantasy numbers, but a couple of touchdown passes. But he's got the Broncos, Jets, and Bengals in the next three games. And they stink, all of them. Mm-hmm. Alex Smith. Listen, if you're in a 2QB league, he's got the Bengals. You could do worse. He had almost 400 yards passing. God bless him. And then if you're really desperate, Andy Dalton's got the Vikings this week. And that's desperate. But I'm desperate times, man. It's 2020. So there's not a lot of quarterbacks that are going to be on the waiver wire right now that have a whole lot of value. So Jameis and Tua are the top two guys.
Okay, wide receiver needs.
Lot of options here. A lot of options. Michael Pittman Jr. has been very good the last 2 weeks. It looks like he's the number one wide receiver for the Colts. At least he's been that over the last two games. Green Bay this week, though. If Green Bay's down their top two corners again, fire him up. If not, pick him up and maybe stash him. Jacoby Myers. I mean, did you see that touchdown pass he threw last week? Like that he had a better spiral than like Tim Tebow ever had. Right. And he was a quarterback. So, but Myers 57 snaps played. He is Cam Newton's guy. They've got the Texans this week. He needs to be added. If Alan Lazard is back for the Packers, then pick him up. Don't know yet. If he's not, Marquez Valdes-Scantling is the pickup. But again, bad matchup this week against the Colts. Jalen Reagor, also worth an add. Tim Patrick and KJ Hamler from Denver, worth adds. Jakeem Grant for the Dolphins with Preston Williams out, worth an add. Cole Beasley, if he's out there, I know they have a bye this week. I don't care. Go get him. Stash him. John Brown's hurt. And Cole Beasley has been one of the most underrated players in fantasy football this season. And then for those who are very desperate, Denzel Mims and Breshad Perriman. They happen to play for the Jets, who stink, but they've got the Chargers this week. Maybe Joe Flacco has another good performance. I mean, he had over 20 points the last game. Probably not going to happen again, but you never know. It's 2020.
Anything can happen. And running back position, what are the needs?
So we mentioned Damien Harris. Mm-hmm. Nyheim Hines is out there in a lot of leagues. And I get it. Like, I can't tell you who's going to be the number one guy for the Colts on a week-to-week basis. Nobody can. I don't even think Frank Reich can. He'll start Taylor. If Taylor fumbles or isn't effective, they'll put in Wilkins. And if he starts beasting out, he'll be the guy. Or it'll be Nyheim. I don't know. I mean, that's how it is. I wish I could tell you. But Hines is coming off another big game. He needs to be owned. The Giants have a bye, but Wayne Gallman's got a touchdown in four straight games. Pick him up and stash him. Now, Miami, you've got Salvin Ahmed. And I've been pronouncing his name wrong. I thought it was Ahmed because there's no K in there, right? You know, it is what it is. But it's Ahmed. Now, if Matt Breida's out again, then Ahmed, I love saying that, is going to be the guy for the Dolphins. Pick him up. But if Breida comes back, it'll be Breida. So you need to keep tabs on Miami's backfield situation. Kalen Ballage, you got to be kidding me.
I know.
Really? So this is – I was talking about this on my show last night on SiriusXM. So this happened twice in the last 2 weeks. Teams grab guys off of their practice squad or off the street. And those players ended up being better than the guys on the 53-man roster, right? Kalen Ballage and Alex Collins in Seattle. Really?
Yeah.
Come on. I mean, this is where we're at. Right? But Kalen Ballage had two big games, and he's got another revenge game against the Jets. Devontae Booker should be owned if you have Josh Jacobs. He's been good the last couple of weeks. Cam Akers is worth a speculative ad. Tony Pollard is worth a speculative ad. And that's about it, the position. There's not a ton to like. And Chicago last night, We thought, well, maybe there's going to be somebody to pick up off of there. Lamar Miller was activated. Cordero Patterson, Ryan Nall. Nothing. That Bears team is in trouble, man, especially with Nick Foles now being out. I'd be trying to sell my shares of Allen Robinson if I could.
Yeah, Foles definitely out. And Kalen Ballage, those Sun Devil fans like to hear that.
So I know. It's funny because last year, like a lot of people, like he's just not the best player, you know, out there. But a lot of people, including myself, are like, take a chance on him, like late. You know, I mean, why not? For Miami?
Yeah.
He didn't do anything. And so we were kind of like, all right. Then what happens? Ends up going to the Jets and fails a physical. So he's out. And then he's on the practice squad and he's kind of like, you know, out of sight, out of mind. He's now in our sight and on our minds. After the last 2 weeks.
That's 2 weeks in a row. Yeah, 2 weeks in a row, he's in our sight. Now, I saw your tweet about tight ends. It's not looking good for waiver wires, but are there any needs?
It's gross. It is gross, folks. Dalton Schultz is probably the best guy on the wire. If you're in a competitive league, he could have gotten dropped because the Cowboys want to buy. 15 targets in his last two games, Vikings this week. The Vikings defense is actually really good against tight ends, but you're looking for volume. I mean, you're looking for volume. So Jordan Reed is worth a look, but they have a bye coming up, San Francisco. So he's not going to help you. But Logan Thomas, 12 targets in his last two games. Alex Smith likes to throw the ball short, intermediate routes. Mm-hmm. They got the Bengals coming up, so Logan Thomas is worth a look. And one other thing, folks, and again, I like to, you know, have fun with the kicker situation, right? If Younghoe got dropped in your league, pick him up. And kickers matter. Jason Sanders has been one of the top kickers in fantasy football, and he's still out there in like half a leagues. And then Tyler Bass hit from 54, 55, 58 this week. This kid's been bananas good. He's got 14-plus points in three of his last four games. He's like more reliable than Lamar Jackson, for crying out loud. And the Bills have a bye, but this kid should be picked up the following week. And this is going to sound crazy, Sandy, but it happens, and it's happening this year. and you want to at me, at Michael_Fabiano. Let's have the argument. Kickers are more valuable than tight ends this year. I'm sorry, they are. They are.
Yes.
Bottom line, they are. Right? I Harrison Butker, you know, Younghoe Koo, Jason Sanders, like Tyler Bass. You're trying to find a tight end to give you 9 points. Mm-hmm. Some of these kickers are giving you like 10, 12 a week. Like, points are points, folks. I'm telling you, people make fun of kickers. I love them. I'm trying to find the best guys. I picked up Koo in a whole bunch of leagues where he got dropped, and I have two kickers on my roster now. I'll kick the other kicker back to the wire this week. But points are points.
Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about. However you can get them. Michael, this is always fun. We didn't even touch on 49ers and how they're just all the injuries. That could take probably a half an hour, but we'll do that next week, maybe.
Yeah, they got a bye week at least to maybe try and get a little bit healthy, but who knows?
Yeah, man, I can't think of a team that has had more adversity this year than the 49ers with all their injuries.
How about the Cowboys?
Oh, yes, yes, you're right. You're right.
I'm just kidding. We stink. It's all right. It's fine. It's
totally understandable.
Vikings are going to boat race us this weekend. That's good.
Well, this is always a fun, as always. Michael Fabiano, I'm Sandy Charles. We will see you next week.